And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Well, when Democratic presidents travel overseas, Roshan Paris is often at their side. Big, complicated trips are her specialty. Here in Kansas City, she's in her 25th year heading her own public relations firm, and she's about to become the fourth woman to lead the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce. Roshan Paris is now in the studio with us, and so good to have you here, Roshan.
It's a treat to be with
Welcome.
You, Steve.
Yeah. The White House says that when it comes to international presidential trips, you handle the big, complicated ones. What makes a presidential trip complicated, or maybe what doesn't make it complicated, right?
You know, we are privileged, obviously, to go to countries all over the world, and we have varying degrees of relations with all of them. And oftentimes we'll hit the ground, and their vision of the president or the first lady's trip there may not be precisely our vision. And so the reason we go ahead of Air Force One is because there are lots of details to be negotiated. What makes the complicated ones the most fun is that the negotiation itself can be an interesting challenge along the way. Obviously, it's not unlike the things that we do right here in Kansas City. When we sit across the table from each other, we have each come with different ideas about how things should turn out. And you take that to a global diplomatic scale, and things get interesting and fun. So I tend to do the stops that are probably the most complicated, the most challenging. And really, that's where the journey is so fulfilling.
What might be a typical misunderstanding you have to sort of work through? Is there something that, when it comes to the vision of how the president of one country is going to meet with the president of another and the backdrop and all that kind of thing? Or what are you dealing with?
You know, I wouldn't call them misunderstandings. I think they're just different points of view. And that's both a diplomatic response and a factual one. We just come with perhaps a different set of ideas based on relations that are very longstanding with representatives from our State Department and our security organizations. And so oftentimes we may come with a different wish list than they might otherwise have. We don't know that until my team hits the ground. We're privileged to lock arms with ambassadors all over the world who are our partners every step of the way and who really are the beacon and the lighthouse in that process. And together with the embassy staff on the ground, we navigate our perception of the perfect trip versus perhaps our host countries, and it's not always the same.
Well, given the fact that you're representing the United States, does the U.S. always win these things, or is it very much a give and take?
We are keenly aware that we've been there before and we'll probably be back to most of these countries.
Spoken like a true diplomat, Roshan. Yeah.
It is like a friendship, only a friendship across the pond, and friends hopefully reach compromise positions. So it's a little bit of you win this one, I win that one sort of thing, which is to say that it is meant to be a partnership. And from day one of the trip to the time that Air Force One touches the ground, the goal is to create a very good, solid working partnership with our colleagues across the world, and we are privileged to be able to do that.
And speaking of that, you're off to Africa just next week, right?
I am indeed.
You know, this strikes me as such a special set of skills. Where did you learn this stuff? How do you – you can't go to school to learn what you're dealing with. So I'm wondering, how did you get there?
You know, I honestly think this is sandbox stuff. I think that every day each one of us gets out of bed and there is a way in which we hope we'll be treated. There is a way in which we pay that forward by treating others in the same way. And the irony is that as complicated as these journeys can be, they are at once also very simple, which is to say that people across the world, whether we speak the same language or not, simply want to be treated with the same level of respect and the same sort of whites of your eyes, I'm going to do what I told you I'm going to do approach.
Mm-hmm.
I have what I fondly refer to as my no surprises speech, which I make the first time we sit down at a very long negotiating table. And what I say is that every one of my colleagues at the table, along with me, will pledge to them a no surprises approach to the visit. We will always be upfront about what we hope will happen. We'll ask them to do the same. And in that spirit of partnership and global friendship, good things generally happen.
I can just see you doing that too. I can just see it. Yeah. Well, your experience with all this goes back a number of years, even to your first tenure with a U.S. senator, I think, out in D.C.
Exactly.
Tell us how you got started out there.
Exactly. So, well, I started work in Washington. I actually went there at the age of – first time at the age of 19, but then moved there at the age of 20, finished my degree at George Washington University at night, and worked for the senior senator from my home state of Kentucky.
Yeah.
From there, ended up back here in Kansas City joyfully, getting my MBA at KU while working for the University of Kansas.
Why did you come back here from D.C.?
My husband, actually, believe it or not, was working for Bob Dole, and our offices were next door. So a little bit of Madeline and Carville going on.
Yeah.
So it was a great journey here to Kansas City, and it has remained home ever since.
Is your husband a Republican?
During that time. Actually, that was first husband.
Oh.
But still great friends.
Still,
so
okay, you worked it out.
The fact that he was a Republican had nothing to do with it.
You could have been Carville and Madeline even
exactly.
even before they came along.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So during that time, I continued to travel with presidential candidates all in 9 presidential campaigns. In 84, traveled full-time with Geraldine Ferraro, the first woman on a presidential ticket. In 87 and 88, traveled for 19 months with Mike and Kitty Dukakis and was
wow.
podium coordinator for the Democratic Convention in Atlanta on the podium advance team in 1988. In 92, nobody thought a Democrat was going to do anything. And on about August, I got a call from Little Rock, Arkansas, saying, you better get down here.
Really?
And 18 years later, traveled with the Clintons to over 60 countries.
You became very close with both of them.
It has been a great journey. It really has. And that journey has continued in lots of ways, and who knows what the future holds.
You know, I know Steve Jakes in town, who's done a lot of presidential advance and just having done reporting with presidential candidates over the years. You know, I know how arduous this is, traveling and trying to work at the same time. You know, and hearing you describe the fact you were out on the trail for months on end, I don't know how a human being does that, having experienced enough of it myself to know just how demanding that is.
You can't need a lot of sleep, so that's job one.
Really, and that's literally true.
That is literally true, and that's a gift. And obviously, now 50-something, that gets a little bit harder, but it's always been something I've been able to blessedly navigate. And so
that's my downfall right there. I just literally, when it's 1 o'clock in the morning, they say your bag will be picked up at 4:30. I'm just like,
right.
Okay,
You're done. You're done.
You win. Yeah.
So that part of it is certainly sometimes challenging. But honestly, I have to tell you, the adrenaline push when you do trips like these really does carry you. And so I can't say that there's ever been a time where it's been challenging. And to be honest, people often say, do you come home from these trips and collapse and just kind of off and running the next day and keep going? I think the adrenaline really does carry you.
You're strange, Roshan. I just don't know how that's just amazing to me to hear you say that.
Well,
It's a
joy and a privilege, and it really does sort of inspire you to keep doing more.
Well, your job on so many of these trips is to do advance work and to set up an event ahead of a presidential visit or a presidential candidate visit. What are some of the things you're checking off your box when you're trying to get a good event set up? I mean, you're talking about backdrops and audience sizes, and walk through what your mental checklist is a little bit.
So I actually have an extraordinary team of people that I take with me, and we will plan literally every aspect of a visit from the minute Air Force One touches the ground in Moscow or Beijing or Tel Aviv to the time that it goes wheels up. So what you just described is one of what may be 20 different moments like that inside of a very tightly compact period of hours or perhaps a couple of days. And so I have a phenomenal team of people who are responsible for every one of those details. And much like any private business here in town would do, we go through a excruciatingly detailed list of every imaginable item.
So how detailed do you get?
So detailed that it would we are down to seconds. We are down to Super Bowl type qualities relative to a number of moments that will happen in a single day. I have often said to our team the night before the plane lands that that we really have four Super Bowls tomorrow, and it's that equivalent of the sorts of things that we sometimes pull off, not so much in terms of the number of people who are present, but certainly in terms of the number of people who will see or experience that event around the world,
yeah.
Simply because, as you know well, the phalanx of media that we have following us everywhere beams these events out not only live, but also to literally hundreds of millions.
So things like backdrops are important, and I guess with the venue itself and how many folks you want to be in there, because you don't want to have a half-empty room, obviously, because the media hops on that and reports that idea very quickly.
You know, that problem is probably more a focus of a domestic visit where we're attracting, you know, Americans to an event. Globally, you don't really have that issue because
yeah. okay.
everyone wants to see the leader of the free world. And I often say it doesn't matter what party he is from. That's been the case since time immemorial. We are still the United States of America anywhere we go.
Yeah.
And there is an extraordinary interest in seeing and being in the room with the leader of the free world, his wife, or members of his administration.
How much of your goal is to make the leader of the free world relaxed, comfortable, mm-hmm. not harried, you know, able to sort of, you know, move through the day in sort of a reasonable way and not be bombarded with too many, you know, outside distractions, I guess.
Here's the good news, and I have a number of colleagues actually who are Republicans who have done this on the other side of the aisle for Republican presidents, and I think we would all say that we are privileged to work with presidents who are generally extraordinarily cool, calm, and collected from day one.
They have to be.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
Our job, however, is certainly to make sure that there are no curveballs and that we don't affect that, because what matters most is not necessarily the backdrop or the placement of the flags, but the fact that good business can be done between countries. And that's really our singular focus, is
yeah.
to create an environment in which the business that we came for can measurably move forward the business of the United States wherever we are anywhere in the world. And that's our focus.
We're visiting with Roshan Paris, who runs her own public relations firm in town. She travels with presidents. She's about to become the fourth woman to lead the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce. If you want to join our conversation, you're welcome to do so. 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, UpToDate at kcur.org. You can also tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. I noticed, Roshan, that on Air Force One, they refer to you as Mama Roshan. Where does that come from?
That actually is true. I think that part of it, frankly, Steve, is age, which is to say that I've been at it this long such that I do have kind of a mothering characteristic. I want to take care of everybody. I want to make sure that from the principals on down that everyone has a good ride on trips that I lead. And as a result, there's a little bit of occasional Jewish mothering going on, I think so.
Yeah, I was struck in 2008, you were working for Hillary Clinton in that very intense race, Democratic presidential nomination race for the White House. And then, you know, later after Barack Obama had secured the nomination, suddenly you were working for him. I imagine that it must have been not the easiest transition to make, going from one camp to another like that. How were you greeted by the Obamaites, and how did that transition go for you?
Well, the interesting thing is that it was, in fact, then Senator Clinton herself who implored her staff to get on board. Interestingly enough, we are all sort of a small family in both Democratic and Republican circles, and so about 20 months earlier, I had gotten a call from Chicago from an old friend who said, I assume you're still with Hillary, but I'm going to ask the stupid question, any chance you'd travel with Senator Obama? And I very graciously said, listen, we'll all be together at the end, thinking,
yeah.
of course, that the pendulum would swing a different direction. and so when Hillary, in fact, withdrew from the race, I put a post-it note up on my computer screen to call that person back, as would only be the right thing to do, and instead got a call very quickly thereafter inviting me to Chicago to take a tour, meet the senior team, and to set out on what became Senator Obama's first international trip.
To so, England, right?
I was London-based. He started in the Middle East, went to
That's
Berlin
right.
for that very huge rally, and then landed eventually in London. And I will never ever forget the extraordinary graciousness with which he greeted me and welcomed me to his team.
Because you bumped into him in the back room somewhere,
well,
in a hotel lobby or in a hallway or something?
Well, not so much bumping in. The plane had landed. We were landing at Her Majesty's hangar, and it was traditional to accord the privilege of arriving there by walking through the hangar. But we were able to pull the motorcade up curbside so that we could offload and move straight to the hotel. I'm always in the lead vehicle, and so on the way there, we learned that the hotel that he was staying up at had leaked. We had people lining the streets everywhere, and the hotel lobby where we had planned to just simply walk straight through was packed. And so instead we went through the kitchen, which is a very fond journey for many presidents or presidential wannabes. And it was the first moment that we had quietly where no one was around where I could introduce myself. And
he said he knew about you.
He
knew you.
He could not have been more gracious. You never
great.
Forget a moment like that.
Yeah,
he didn't need to be as he was.
Roshan Paris is with us. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, UpToDate at KCUR.org. Let's go to Pat from Overland Park. Pat, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Good to have you.
Hi, Shannon. Very interesting career you've had. I was wondering, what is your biggest cultural faux pas you've experienced in your world travels?
Boy, that's a fun question.
Cultural faux pas.
You know, happily, I don't think I've ever had a huge stumble, but I will tell you that probably one of the biggest challenges comes around food. I have been in some countries around the world where when you are invited very graciously to what is effectively a state dinner for staff, the ambassador is often with us, that there is food presented that A, not only is not identifiable, B, not only is not something that by American standards would be something we'd be dying to dive into,
yeah.
But C, and perhaps most importantly, is still moving on the plate. And that's where I have had to draw the line. And so we've gotten a little good about moving things around the plate so that it looks like you've dived into it, but it makes it pretty tough. So there have been some potential faux pas around just not wanting to offend host countries and otherwise behave as though you're taking in the culture in full glory.
I'm wondering if there's a moment, either a speech or a crowd or an event or maybe not, maybe just a place you were able to see with your own eyes that you'd always wanted to see that sort of stands out in all your journeys over the years.
You know, only because he's in my mind and in my heart, I would have to say that the unexpected privilege of meeting Nelson Mandela in his own living room
Is that right?
was you know, beyond a bucket list moment. I was there a couple of years ago with the First Lady, first visit obviously of an African-American First Lady to the continent. She honored them by bringing both her daughters and her mother, which is a point of great honor for Africans. And we weren't sure he would be well enough to receive her, so it was a last-minute call by his wife. And that was sort of one of those breathtaking pinch-me moments. But there have been so many. I'd have to say on every trip there is a moment where you take a deep breath and say, remember to tell the grandkids about this one.
No, I get that.
You know, 56 heads of state came together for the 50th anniversary of the end of World War II, and standing in the Kremlin where no press was allowed and observing the ceremonies, being literally alongside Mother Teresa's burial site, not only for her funeral, but her private burial site at the Mother House, being there in Westminster Abbey when Princess Diana was brought in for her funeral, and the night before at Kensington Palace, which was lit up by silent candles, being there for the moment when President Clinton met Yasser Arafat in Gaza, where we had shots being fired around us. So many moments of history that are embedded in my mind, and I hope I never get too old to remember them all.
Roshanne Paris again is our guest, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about, you're about to become the fourth woman chair of the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce. Are there enough women in the chamber these days, Roshanne?
There are a lot of women in the chamber.
Sure, happily. There are. Enough?
And, you know, I think most of us women would say there are never enough. Mm-hmm. We would say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek. But, you know, honestly, Steve, I am a cup half-full person. I believe that great strides have been made. And by the way, you know, I think it would be – I would be remiss in saying that it's – only about more women. It's not only about more women, but about more African Americans, more Hispanic, more Asians.
Sure.
Everywhere we go, that the issues of equality prevail, and as well they should. But I think that there have been so many extraordinary strides made, and women in this community, as well as in so many others, are aspiring to and reaching some extraordinary heights, and it's a privilege to be a part of that.
How about the number of women CEOs in town? How satisfied are you with that? And I guess even these days, the number of women political leaders around town, we used to have lots and maybe not so many today.
You know, I think Kansas City is probably not disproportionate to the rest of the country in that regard. I don't think that we have a story to tell that's better or worse. I do think, and this is the exciting thing, that there are more and more women growing up in small business who are doing great things, and I'm testament to that.
Mm-hmm.
So and privileged to be a part of that journey. And I think you'll continue to see more there because not only based on economic circumstances, but also based on just opportunities, that's a great niche for women.
You know, are there certain fields that have proven to be over time, you know, more open to women than other fields? Some fields maybe you're a little more concerned about?
You know, it would be common sense that in the construction industry, traditionally in the old days in engineering, in architecture, you tended to see perhaps be a little bit more laden with men, anything that was otherwise attached to heavy industry.
Yeah.
But again, I think breakthroughs have been extraordinary. I mean, you talk to a Greg Graves at Burns & McDonnell who's done amazing things for women in the workforce you know, in the law and accounting industries as well, where firms like Polsinelli and KPMG and others have really put a huge focus on women in their midst and ensuring that they can take flight in whatever way is possible. Avenues have been opened up significantly.
We're visiting with Roshanne Paris, who's about to become the fourth woman chair of the Greater Kansas City Chamber. You know, the chamber, Roshanne, is working on these five big ideas. I'm going to tick them off just very quickly here. Revitalizing the urban core, making Kansas City the country's most entrepreneurial city, moving UMKC's arts campus downtown, growing Kansas City's medical research component, and then animal research. This has been a huge, huge bite for the chamber to take on these five big ideas. Has it been too much, or how satisfied are you with what you're seeing out there
in terms
of progress on these five?
First of all, thank you for asking about it because the Big Five is just an enormously mm-hmm. exciting initiative. And it has not only not been too much, but you may see us trying to bite off even more of that apple in the coming years.
Because this is certainly a sign that the chamber wants to become more engaged, more involved directly in some of the big issues that our town faces.
And that the chamber wants to be not only involved but actively moving the needle toward making things happen, not only better but faster and more effectively. There is an enormous energy around these five issues. As you know, we looked at over 180 opportunities for issues.
There were no shortage.
Absolutely, which suggests, obviously, that we're not going to stop.
Yeah.
But what you have seen, which is really perhaps most exciting, is that whereas you had chamber chair after chamber chair come forward with their own unique agenda for what is a lightning-fast 12-month gig.
That's right.
You now have a coalition of all of us around these ideas.
And some continuity.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so whereas you might have today asked me what my mission might be this November, in fact, it becomes our mission. And we have all locked arms around really creating some systemic change in some areas that have needed some laser-like dedicated focus. So if you will, we're sort of a business SWAT team.
Yeah.
Dedicated to going in and making measurable, positive change in our community in what we hope is faster order.
So is your tenure simply about continuing the push on the Big Five, or are you bringing something else to it?
We may. The answer may be yes and yes.
And you're not going to tell us right now, are you?
Probably not, yeah. but stay tuned.
Yes.
Our chairman, Russ Welsh, has done an extraordinary job of continuing the fire that Greg Graves lit and so many others as well surrounding him and our chamber champions. And just stay tuned. There's some really good stuff happening, and there's going to be more where that came from.
Well, which of the five have you felt most satisfied with the progress that's been made? Is there one that really stands out that you're pointing to that this is what we can do?
You know, it's interesting. There's definitely more than one, and potentially several that fall in that category.
Like?
All of them have made great strides, but you will hear later this year in more specificity, precisely what those are. But the board of directors at the Urban Neighborhood Initiative is intensely engaged. Peter DeSilva has done an outstanding job with the entrepreneurism effort.
Yeah.
You know well about the activities with UMKC.
Big deal for the campus.
Really, yeah. Big deal. And Leo Morton is unstoppable in that regard.
Yes, he is.
Gary Forsey has been all over the animal health opportunities, and some good things have happened there. And life sciences is a leverageable opportunity that we cannot afford to miss. And Pat James has done a great job there.
Let's go to some phone calls quickly for Roshan Paris. Pam from Lee Summit, you're on with Roshan Paris. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I wanted to ask you, Roshan, if you have a favorite quote that you live by or that motivates you every day.
Pam, I'm smiling.
She wants you to share your magic a little bit, Roshan, I think, yeah.
I'm smiling as you asked that question because as I left my desk this morning, I looked down at a little metal bar that I have, and the words say, "What would you attempt to do if you knew you couldn't fail?" And that is something that inspires me every day. I am so privileged, and I click my heels every day to be here in Kansas City and to be able to work and live and savor friendships and children growing up here. I'm also privileged to see the sunrise on the other side of the earth from time to time. And I think that if every day we get up and say, how would we treat this day if we knew that whatever we truly wanted to achieve, we couldn't fail at, big things would continue to happen. And so I would perhaps encourage that. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, Pam, thank you. And Jake, I'm going to summarize his question. He makes a point that moving the UMKC Conservatory of Music downtown is the wrong thing to do. Some folks feel that way.
Some folks do feel that way. And you know, that's part of the dialogue that we all need to be listening to and we have listened to. We can only hope that in changes that we work to make, that they turn out to be pleasant surprises.
Roshan, it's been a pleasure to have you. Thanks for taking the time.
Well. Thanks so much, Steve.
That's Roshan Paris. She's president and CEO of Paris Communications. She's the fourth woman elected to be the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce chair. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow on the program, join us for the first edition of Steve's Bookshelf to see what I've got on my summertime reading list. And Brian McTavish will swing by with his weekend to-do list. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, Caitlin Brennan, and Sangeeta Sastry. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.